We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. Welcome to the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. This is me, Lean, from arsenalvision.co.uk. So, well. Defeat at the hands of the mighty West Brom at the weekend. But it was all made far worse by the news that Francis Coquelin is now going to be missing for some time. Now, I can handle a defeat. You can't expect to win every game. We won five games in a row not so long ago. Setbacks happen, as we've seen from everyone this season. That's fine. But when you lose a key player for a long period of the season, it hurts a little bit, doesn't it? Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how we reshape the midfield going forward now. Will Arsene Wenger buy in the window, especially if Mikel Arteta's calves keep going? And we're lacking in numbers in that area now. Well, not the area of the pitch, but in that particular position. So yeah, our injuries are a big concern at the moment, as they are most seasons, aren't they, really? Hoping last season, especially the second half of the season, when our injury record improved a lot. We got players back after Christmas and they stayed fit till the end. Thought, oh yeah, this is good. This is what it's supposed to be like. Injury here for a few days. Oh, it's fine. They're back again. You know, oh, he's out for a week. Don't worry. Player will come back. Oh, he's back again. Look at this. This is great. This is how normal teams operate. But unfortunately with us, the same problems keep happening and a lot of the same faces are injured at the same part of the season in the same position. Because this is what we do. I don't know if we didn't do this though. But yeah, not so concerned about the performance, because to be honest, it wasn't much different to our, you know, Watford away, Swansea away performance, Palace away even. It's just that both ends of the pitch, defensively and offensively, we weren't as strong or sharp as we should have been. When that happens, you can unfortunately get punished. Joel Campbell really should have scored. Maybe 9 times out of 10 he would have scored. Missed a penalty. A player of Santi Cazorla's quality, he scored every penalty so far. He slipped. Sometimes it happens. And yeah, unfortunately, we made some really poor defensive errors, and that's my biggest concern, really, of the day. Don't know what to say, really. We'll see how things go on from now on. Now we've got Zagreb tonight. In a strange sort of way, I'm not really that fussed about the game. Well, at the moment, we're recording this anyway. I'm sure, when the game comes around, I'll be very different, but sort of what in the Premier League. I'm a bit concerned about the players we have playing so many games and not enough rotation. So we need to get our squad players back in the squad, and back on the pitch so we can rotate and get some sharpness and some freshness back. So anyway, yeah, enjoy the match tonight and we'll be back after that one again.
It's not all bad news at West Bromwich Albion, as Santi Cazorla's penalty kick has given NASA new views of space that we will use for further exploration in the future. This is the Arsenal Vision Post-Match Podcast. My name is Elliot Smith, and you can block me on Twitter at Yankee Gunner. At the moment, we are tasked with the unenviable position of having to break down the breakdown in West Brom, including not just the goals conceded and the goals that weren't scored, but also the knee. Oh, the knee. The knee of the cock. Who knew a cock had a knee? And now we know, unfortunately. But we're here to talk about it with two very erudite and sophisticated gentlemen, and I use that term loosely. The first is Paul. You can find him on Twitter, at Posnan in my pants. Hello, Paul.
Woohoo!
That's extremely ebullient under the circumstances. The second is Tim. You can find him virtually everywhere, but on Twitter, he's still Birdo. Hello, Tim.
Hello there.
Hey, so, yeah, this didn't go exactly according to plan. It's after an international break. Obviously, you know, things are going to be a little challenging. We already know what our injury issues were, and we will get into the Coughlin thing. I think what's going to be most interesting here is to kind of dissect what now. My own personal approach would be to spend this entire time ranting and raving about the summer, but what's done is done, so maybe that's not going to appeal to anyone. So let's just start with the game itself. And where the breakdowns were and where the opportunities were. Interestingly enough, I actually didn't think the performance was as bad as it was painted, especially second half when we dominated. But Tim, why don't we start with you? First half, we get the goal. What did you think of the performance first half? Forget defensively for a minute, but in terms of creating chances, because the goal aside, it really seemed like we were struggling to break them down.
Yeah, it did a bit. And actually, it looked like it was following the pattern of quite a few of our recent away games, and I think in many ways that's the problem. I think it was very similar to the first half against Swansea, to the first half against Watford, although West Brom didn't create an awful lot either, whereas arguably Watford did have a chance or two. And I think the problem was going 1-0 up, actually, and I think the players just for a few minutes thought, oh, this is just going to pan out exactly like our other recent away games have, and we'll probably come away with a 3-0 win. And really, you look at the whole piece of this game, I think Arsenal dropped their focus for 10% for 10 minutes, and it cost them the entire game as a result. And that's a huge, huge lesson for the team, I think. But it's kind of one they've been taught repeatedly before. So, and actually creatively, in the second half, we did have quite a few chances considering it was, I mean, West Brom started with a 4-5-1, 0-0. So, and they left Berahino on the bench. So obviously they were going to play that way to the power of six, when it went to 2-1. And I predicted a draw before the game because I just don't think there's enough impetus. Basically, we don't have enough players to do anything fresh. And I predicted a draw against Spurs. I predicted a draw against West Brom for that exact reason. Actually, I'm reasonably satisfied given the circumstances that it was an awful pitch, that we couldn't bring anyone of any great use on other than Joel Campbell, who isn't of great use, unfortunately. And actually, I thought we created enough in that second half to get a result, and it was just a mixture of not quite finding the finish, and you know, obviously the penalties just, you know, summed it all up, really. So I actually think offensively it was possibly better than I expected, and I think we did kind of deserve something from it in the end. But really, this is just another slightly worrying sign of Arsenal just going 1-0 up and taking it a little bit too easy. And that only went on for 10 minutes, but that's all it takes to lose a game. And, you know, I'd like to think that there's a lesson there somewhere, but I feel like we've seen it too many times before, and that actually Arsenal are just the kind of team that every 10 games or so, this is probably going to happen.
Yeah, you know, I'm always prone to giving in to hysteria wherever possible. But I think what's interesting is we'd actually been, if I remember correctly, on a pretty fantastic run statistically of not dropping points where we'd taken the lead. Our problem had been not recovering losing positions. So I know we have had a lot of collapses down the years and lost a lot of leads, but recently we've been very good front runners, very good with the lead. I thought that the goals were a little bit fluky, and for me the problem continues to be, while I know we've conceded too many headed goals and set piece opportunities and things like that. The problem for me still seems to be a paucity of really reliable goal scoring options. So for you, Paul, on the day, Giroud, Campbell, Alexis, what was your appraisal of how they performed, especially in the first half, where I know we did take the lead, but it, from open play, we really struggled to create.
Well, what was amazing was in the first, just before the goal, we pretty much hadn't got into their box. There was a free kick from Alexis. That got us into the box. And I think there was one pass that Alexis ran onto that kind of ran out for either a goal kick or a corner, probably a goal kick because I don't remember much of a corner. And there was pretty much nothing before the free kick that led to the goal. I mean, we looked okay at the back. We were knocking it around in the middle, whatever that phrase you used the last time, cadenzas or
Petunias.
Stanzas. Yeah, we were in the in the middle stanza. We were half decent, but as we approached the end of that middle stanza into the first stanza, or is it the third? You know, there was just nothing there. We couldn't get, we couldn't remotely get near the box. I mean, it was just amazing. And then, with about a minute or two before the free kick that set up the goal, we started beginning. You know, that was about 25 minutes of the game. We started beginning to look like we might actually threaten the box at some stage, and then Tim kind of adequately described the following 10 minutes after the goal. In terms of our attack, I mean, Giroud was just completely neutralized for the whole game. It was the classic him banging up against two center backs, looking frustrated, not having the pace to do anything different other than keep banging against the center backs, and they just had him penned in. And once they had him penned in, and they were so solid centrally, you know, they were pushing us out to the wings, knowing that we didn't really have any options, and we weren't very keen to go to the byline, so we were bringing it back into the center. I mean, it was just kind of seemed to be playing into their hands. I mean, our front three in the first half was Gibbs, Giroud, and Alexis. Alexis was supposed to be tired, but he looked lively throughout the whole game. I thought Gibbs actually did a pretty decent job pretending to be a winger. And I think he did okay in the first half, really through to the substitution. You know, I think he did himself proud. Obviously, you wouldn't go out and buy him in the market as a winger, but I think that side was extremely secure against them, so everything that happened came down the other side against Bellerin, unfortunately. It wasn't his best day by a long shot. And that's where our McLean looked very lively, very quick for a big lad. I thought Gibbs did okay. I thought Alexis did really good. I think Ozil won't get the credit he did for that game because we were so shit generally. Coquelin only lasted 10 minutes, which brought in Arteta. So Arteta really had pretty much a chance for a full start.
It wasn't a great cameo for him.
but I'll say this. I thought he played well outside of, like, the cock-ups. The Arteta-Cazorla midfield thing, they looked pretty reasonable. We were just beginning to maybe get into it when we got the goal. And I thought Arteta did reasonably well at the beginning of the second half, too. I thought that had some promise in this scenario. But, you know, the goals just completely unhinged us. But I thought his open field play for Arteta was actually fairly reasonable. Anyway, I'll take a breather there.
Well, so the second half, I mean, so Giroud scores, and I think the interesting thing is it was a very poor game from him, I thought. But there was a point there right before he scored where I said, you know what, our only chance of scoring a goal might be a set piece or a long ball or a cross, because from open play, we just don't look like passing our way through them. There's no cohesion. And sure enough, Giroud was able to get that. But in the second half, we really pushed them back. They defended incredibly deep. I mean, they just about employed the 11 men standing in their own goal approach to defending. Tim, was the second half really a case of seeing just how slim our goal-scoring options on the pitch are right now, and that with one or two more in-form goal-oriented players, we could have had quite a few, because they were really defending deep, and nobody seemed to want to step up and have and make the moment theirs.
Absolutely, and actually, you know, I think in a way, Joel Campbell changed things, actually, when he came on. In terms of, he just varied our threat a little bit. Because he's a wide player that kind of has a centre-forward's mind, what he kept doing was he kept going for the West Brom left-back, whose name I completely forget. And that left-back did not look comfortable at all. And all of a sudden we had, and you'll remember it from the gilt-edged chance that he missed, but actually that ball came in quite a few times, that diagonal ball to the back post. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden we had somebody actually running in behind the fullback, and I don't think he looked comfortable with that at all. We switched Alexis to the right. Alexis back to the left. And what he does really, really well is that he doesn't quite sit on the touchline, but he doesn't come that far in either. So he actually kind of occupies this space where it's very difficult to know who should pick him up, because you've got the defensive midfielder thinking, well, he's far enough in field there that I might have to pick him up. And then you've got the fullback going, well, he's kind of my guy, but he's just a little bit, and you know, he creates this confusion. And I think he did that much better on the left-hand side than he did on the right. And all of a sudden we had this kind of nice momentum going where Alexis was able to carry the ball in field. And that kind of whip ball to the back post was on quite a lot. Unfortunately, Joel Campbell just doesn't really quite have the touch or the killer instinct to have really made that count. On the back post, his movement was very good, actually. But, you know, and you saw with that kind of gilt-edged chance, it just didn't quite come off. But it was that exact ball as well as where we got the penalty from. It was Cazorla, I think, this time that put it in. And you had Alexis and Joel Campbell attacking that back post. And West Brom didn't look comfortable there because it was pulling their players away from Giroud. And it did give us a bit of variety. But unfortunately, we just didn't quite have the quality to make it count.
That's the difference for me. You can talk about the goals we conceded all you want, but when you spend 45 minutes in their 6-yard box and you have a penalty and you have an open shot on goal along with 8 or 9 other half chances or good opportunities, you should be able to recover that position. It's not like they peppered us with shots. It's not like we were particularly vulnerable. They took advantage of instability in our midfield momentarily after Coughlin came out. And, you know, that affected us. And who knows? I mean, maybe Arteta was even playing with the calf thing to try to run it off. But to me, the issue right now is that I just don't see who's going to step up and get goals. I mean, you'd expect Alexis Sanchez to do it, but there's certainly a question about how fit and ready he is right now. And once again, all the way back from Chile just a couple days before kickoff. And Giroud doesn't seem to gel well with the players that are available right now, and Joel Campbell is not going to step up. I actually thought after Joel missed his opportunity, he really hid and marked himself right out of the game. And that's really hard to watch because that tells you about his character. You know, you miss an open chance and then your game is over. I assume, Paul, and I'll let you answer this quickly because I don't think this is a point of discussion. I know Cazorla's been out of form. There's no debate about him taking the penalty, right?
Not for me. All the shenanigans from West Brom, you know, they're really taking on the loathsome personality and skin of their manager.
Put your penalty away. You know, I mean,
oh, I agree.
Step up
I agree.
And put your penalty away.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's no excuses in the end. But he's certainly he was the right man to take the penalty. Would have been interesting if Arteta was still on the pitch.
Interesting point. Yeah, I mean, Tim, just real quick, no debate from you either, right?
No. His record from the spot's fantastic. And, and on this occasion, you know, I mean, he slipped over. What can you do about that? And there was a lot of shenanigans before the penalty. People would have seen Craig Gardner, but Olsen before that was in his face. Giroud came along and, to his credit, got rid of Olsen. The second he got Olsen out of the way, and actually Olsen tampered with the penalty spot as well when the ball was spotted, and Cazorla had to re-spot the ball. And then after that, you know, it's just quite unlucky, really, to be honest.
Yeah, Paul?
Yeah, there was a really interesting piece on the breakdown with Adrian Clarke, because I would have been fully in line with what Tim said on the penalty, but he does have a really interesting snapshot of Cazorla just as he's striking the ball. and he's leaning way too much back. It's almost like he's overcompensating and trying to smack it in. I think they did get to him. And you know, it's hard to describe when you look at it. He's really stabbed his foot into the ground at the last moment, and I think they've put him off his usual technique. But anyway, just for people to have a check, you know, who am I to critique a professional footballer's penalty-taking posture? But they did get a really good snapshot of him just as he strikes the ball. And, you know, you can see from the angle that he has no chance of staying upright on that pitch. But anyway, that's just
I'd just add really, really quickly that from the ground, like the turf was terrible, absolutely terrible. And actually, if you look at Joel Campbell's chance, it comes because the West Brom defender slips over because it's, you know, it's like a cow patch in there. So, it's not a massive surprise that he lost his footing on that ground.
Oh, yeah. Look, I have some sympathy for his slip. I'm just saying, you know, at that point, he is the penalty taker, and you expect him to step up and make it.
Yeah. I do think it's a pretty damn good excuse for why we were so slow getting started. I mean, not completely, but, I mean, it really looked like you were having to push this ball around the place. There was no zip. You could maybe forgive the first 10 or 15 minutes of us taking a while to get the crank going there. It was just a goddamn awful pitch. Maybe not 25 minutes, but you could see why we were slow getting out of the gate and getting anything go. The second half, I thought we were, yeah.
What was that? Oh, yeah, it was frigid cold, right?
Hey, I got to say, the away support, when I watched it the second time, the away support, I really enjoyed it. Like, they were really giving the Brummies some stick. It was quite a lively bunch out there, so I that was one of the aspects I thought, yeah, I'm getting my money's worth here.
So, Tim, the thing for me is, you know, you can go over the pitch or the tactics or the international break and all of these other things, but at some point you have to come back and look at the players on the pitch and say, you got Joel Campbell, you got Gibbs playing up, you know, as a forward, you've got Matthew Flamini after Arteta goes off, you've got not a lot of, you know, Giroud, who's hit and miss, really doesn't seem to gel with this group. Santi Cazorla, who's out of form. I mean, is there a point to be made here that the quality is just desperately lacking at this point, that the squad has been stretched too far, and it's too much to ask that the two stars of this team, Alexis and Ozil, do all the work for the rest of them?
There's an element of that. I think it's the type of player we've lost as well, because there is actually variety in the squad, but we've lost, Ramsey, Chamberlain, Walcott. These are, you know, guys who change the pace of the way you're playing. And really, with all of them out, Alexis is now really the only player that does that. So I think it's as much the type of player we have out as well as how many. I think if you've got a spread of injuries, you can mitigate for it to a certain extent. But when you've got not just players in the same position, but and Wilshere is another one, and Rosicki is another one. These are guys that change the tempo of how you play. And it's just a few too many of that type of player. But for me, the worry, the takeaway for me here is the focus, which I think it's just something that happens to this team. Every now and then, they just drop off. They just get a bit complacent. At the risk of digressing too much, I've just listened to a really, really good podcast. A guy called Graham Hunter does these interviews with kind of old footballers, and they're really, really good interviews. I really recommend it. I've just been listening to one with Graham Souness, and Souness uses this phrase that Joe Fagan used to tell the Liverpool players: "Find the dope." Was the phrase he used to use, because he used to say, The top players are the ones that focus for every single second of every single game. That's what separates players. And Joe Fagan used to say, you know, there's one player on that team that for 1 second, 2 seconds, will try and take a breather. Maybe when the ball goes out of play for a throw-in, run and get that ball, sprint, take the throw-in quickly, test his concentration, because there will be one player in that team who for 1 second will let them down. And he said the best teams are the ones that don't do that, that focus constantly. And actually, when I heard him say that, I thought to myself, Arsenal don't do that. And to an extent, I don't think they ever really have under Wenger. I do think even Wenger's best teams had that kind of that in them where they would perhaps coast, maybe from a position of strength, but still. And that's my big worry, that every 10 games or so, we're just going to get this again where there's a kind of, yeah, we're all right, we're doing well, and the focus drops just 2 or 3% for 2 or 3 minutes and points go down the toilet. And I'm just not sure I ever really see them learning that lesson enough.
I don't disagree to some extent, Tim, but like, isn't it very easy to often find reasons for things other than just the players aren't good enough? Like, I'm not saying these players aren't good enough to beat West Brom, but like, if Coughlin's on the pitch, maybe they don't get their second. And, you know, if Ramsey's out there instead of Campbell, maybe he tucks away that chance. And if Coughlin's still out there, maybe Cazorla has a better game. And, you know, if Theo's out there, Alexis comes alive more and the whole dynamic works better. I mean,
but Paul, the goals were all mistakes from good players. I mean,
who are the good players? Just out of curiosity,
Arteta.
He's not a good player.
Oh please, he might. He
not was
have
a good player.
Legs.
He's done, but he's done. But, right? I mean, he's done.
But hang on, he's in the 6-yard box. He's taking a position. He's got all the skills he needs to handle that.
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
There's absolutely no reason he couldn't have performed in that situation. Bellerin's involved in it. You know,
yes.
Mikel Arteta getting organized in a wall. Bellerin getting his positions right. Bellerin getting back and marking. I think it was McLean who went to the byline. Koscielny escorting the player he's marking. These are all good players.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, like, you know, if Coughlin's on the pitch, it's a slight step up in athleticism and confidence and quality, and maybe the goal doesn't get given away. Or if Ramsey's out there, maybe the Joel Campbell chance is a goal. Or, I mean, there's a lot of quality missing on the pitch right now, and it's easy to point to bad pitches or this, that, or the other thing. What I'm asking you, Paul, is have we reached a point where the quality of the players we're putting on the pitch can't be expected to deliver results game in, game out? Because, I mean, look, Gibbs is starting as a forward. Then Joel Campbell's coming in to rescue a game. Then Arteta's going in and out, and Flamini's coming back in. I mean, at some point, don't you just point to the personnel and say, I mean, let me ask you this, Paul. How different was the team that finished that game yesterday from the team that started last season in the worst form for 30 years? It's not much different.
Well, I certainly agree in terms of I mean, I did think yesterday, you know, back to the debate of, is this team any better than last year? Well, I kind of bridle at that question and comment, because it obviously is. But right now we're in a rut where it feels we're no better than our low point last year in terms of team and team selection. But I think it's about team selection. I mean, our issues yesterday were two stupid goals off set pieces or somebody putting a cross into the box, which we've seen quite a bit at the start of the season. And then I was cheered up greatly to see us overperforming on set pieces recently. And once again, we got a goal from that. Ozil seems to be quite good at that. You know, there were quite a few good things in this game. That's why, and I think we said this before, you can't paint it all one color. There were some good things in this game. I'm surprised all three of us feel that the second half was actually, you know, it was a pretty decent half. It wasn't great, but there was enough in that for us certainly to get that extra goal and to get it back to level, and maybe earlier than when we got that second goal. And I think
that's also why, though, I'm not as critical of the goals we gave away, because my opinion on that game is, with better quality in the final third and more confident, skillful players, we had the opportunity to score 3, 4, 5, 6 in the second half. I mean, sometimes you're going to give away stupid goals. Quality players do it too, as you pointed out. But in my opinion, it was really the inability to convert opportunities yesterday cost us.
I know where you're going, but I think you're going to have games in the season where you're short of players. And to Tim's point, it really comes down to focus. And those were focus issues yesterday. There's no you can kind of understand it from Arteta. He's been in and out, mostly out. But that was a focus issue. Bellerin, I felt, played a role in both those goals. And there was more he could have done. There's no reason he couldn't have done better. The people involved in the goals, there's no real excuse for it. When Jonas banged it off the crossbar, I mean, it was him up against Flamini. We were doing our zonal marking. I mean, we were doing our thing. I mean, there's no reason we couldn't have defended those three situations better. I think you've a valid point, but it's kind of, to me, it's a separate point. That really affects us going forward. It doesn't really affect those goals. That's all about focus and having that consistency in the season. And in a game like this where you're feeding off scraps and you need to not make those mistakes or you're going to get hurt. I think this was a self-inflicted wound yesterday that wasn't really about the quality on the pitch. That's another story that impacted it.
Okay, I mean, my disagreement is just that I think if we had more quality on the pitch, even having conceded two goals, we come back and win and maybe comfortably. Tim, let me ask you a quick question. Yes. The team that finished the game, if that team had to play the next 20 games in the league, where does Arsenal finish?
That would depend on what happens to kind of other teams, I think, fitness-wise. I think.
Oh, that's such a punt.
It'd still finish in the top four perfectly fine, I think.
Okay.
The worry for me is, you know, kind of going back a little bit, is that was our first choice back five on Saturday, and probably all of them made errors in, because I didn't think Cech did brilliantly on the second goal either, as good as he's been. And that is focus, and really what happens... Every team has that. You look at Arsenal in, I think, 97, 98 when they won the double. They had huge injury problems. I remember this one game against Crystal Palace where, honestly, I posted the starting lineup on Twitter a couple of weeks ago because I looked it up. And Paolo Vernazza started on the right wing. We played Shields Grimondi in midfield even though he was injured because like we had all these injuries. And what did we do? We won the game 1-0 and we got a bit of a fluky goal, a Gilles Grimondi kind of overhead kick. That's not something you can really legislate for. But we stayed solid. We didn't make any mistakes. And that's what, if you're going for the league, that's what you do. You go, do you know what? We've not got much on the bench today. We've not got much going forward. And we went 1-0 up in this game. And that should have been enough. Because, you know, you go 1-0 up and you go, right, we've got our first choice back five here. This is West Brom. There are no great shakes going forward. You know, that should be enough. And in most circumstances, it would have been. And we would have been able to kick on had we not just lost that bit of focus with 10 minutes to go. But to bring it back to your question a little bit.
I had a question? That's a rarity. I just rant and then stop talking?
I mean, obviously, no. That team that finished the game against West Brom, that is not winning the league, irregardless of how weak the Premier League is at the moment or how compact it is, that will not win the league. And I don't think anyone would expect it to. I don't think any other team with, shall we say, equal injury issues would either, to be honest.
Right.
I think that team, objectively speaking, would finish third or fourth, depending on whether Liverpool's renaissance under Klopp is, you know, the real deal, considering whether Spurs are growing into something approaching the real deal. It'd still finish in the top four, but no, it wouldn't be challenging to the league.
I think that's fair. I mean, it's hard to say right now because it is a hodgepodge of players that really were not intended to be on the pitch altogether, and that comes back to our next point. I'll just say something really quickly about goals versus defending. There's only one team in the league. Only Man United has conceded fewer goals than Arsenal. But five teams have scored more goals than Arsenal. And I know it's, you know, it's still early and that, you know, that's not statistically scientific, but it's the point that I think all of us going into the season, if I said to you, which is going to keep us from winning the league, conceding too many or not scoring enough, I still think we would have said not scoring enough. But let's move on to really the heart of the matter now. And Paul, I'll start with you. Francis Coughlin gets injured. Looks like it's ligaments. It looks like it could be 2-3 months or beyond if the scans come back negative positive for a tear. It could be the end of his season. What do you make of where we go with that position now? What would be your preference? And what do you see the manager ultimately settling on?
Okay. 50 games, 50 games undefeated, playing football the Flamini way. So apparently he's 50 games undefeated at the Emirates.
What, was that in like 1972, though? Just out of curiosity.
What?
That it was a while. It was a while ago.
Well, here's my feeling. My vote is we stick with Flamini. I think it keeps all the other working parts working as they are. We obviously need more up front, but shifting the guys around, I don't think fix that. I think you just, it's whack-a-mole. The problems will show up elsewhere if you move Cazorla around, or if you move Ramsey back when he comes back. You know, if we've got Giroud up front, we're going to need Ramsey on the right wing to start being effective, etc. I think Flamini got a lot of stick last year. When he wasn't terrible, he was okay. And I think his records at the Emirates, while taking 50 games is a lot. I don't buy into this, oh, look how many games we won with this guy on the team. But 50 games is a lot, where maybe I wouldn't say it proves he's great, but it probably proves he's not completely shit.
Well, I mean, Patrick Vieira once won a season undefeated, but he's not going to walk back into our midfield tomorrow either. I mean, he's been to Milan and back and injured and old and slow and, you know.
But it probably means he was pretty good.
He also was our basically playing in the center of our midfield last year during the worst run we've had in 30 years.
Yeah, but he's undefeated at home, which which tells you he can't be completely shit.
I don't think he's completely shit. I think what we're looking at now is what are our prospects in the wake of the Coughlin injury, because we're not trying to finish fourth. I mean, that's the problem with this debate is people want to come to the defensive players like they're not completely shit. I don't think any of them are completely shit. I think they may not be good enough to carry us to a title, which is really what we're all hoping for.
Well, if I was Flamini's lawyer, I'd dump me, because that's not exactly coming to somebody's defense. I'm just saying, I think he's okay. He's not completely shit defense, I grant you that. I think he's okay. I think he's actually in a pretty good run of form for him. And I think, I don't know what we do in January. I think you mentioned Flamini and Chambers. There might be opportunities to experiment at some stage with the Cazorla-Ramsey thing, but I just don't feel that's the right mix. I don't think we have an option. I think Flamini is okay. I think we'll be found out against the better teams, or if there's a lot of transition stretching our midfield. But I think that's the way you go.
Okay. What about you, Tim? I mean, what are the prospects without Coughlin? And not only who would you go with, but what, if anything, do you make of Arsene Wenger's suggestion that Chambers could be used there?
I won't elaborate too much on part of the question because I completely agree with Paul. I'd just play Flamini because I think he's the best working impression we have of Coquelin. And
fair enough.
In his kind of limited appearances this season, I think he's looked pretty decent. So I'd just keep everything else the same and, you know, hope that he enjoys some kind of renaissance. It is the last year of his contract, so he's got form there. But, you know, we were kind of in a similar position about this time last year, weren't we? And things actually fitted together pretty quickly, even though they were put there out of necessity. You know, last Christmas we were looking at, oh, shite, Bellerin's, like, had a poor game against Stoke, but we got no choice but to play him, and we've had to bring Coughlin in from Charlton on loan, and we got no choice but to play him, and Chesney's gone completely rogue, so we've got Ospina and we've got to play him, and actually it all fitted together quite nicely, whether by luck or design I'm not quite sure, and we can only hope for similar on this occasion. But I'd stick with Flamini. For me, Chambers, Chambers is certainly an option there. He's probably the option after Flamini. I'm not sure he quite brings that mobility there. I'm not convinced.
What about how he handles being pressed? I mean, we saw against Liverpool in the first half that you put some pressure on him and he will give the ball away. That's, to me, that performance would be the biggest worry about sticking him in the heart of our midfield as the deepest midfielder.
Although he did at first, I think it's worth saying he
recovered
after that.
Yeah, but that's in his locker, right? I mean, we've seen him produce that.
It's certainly not ideal. You can't play for me Chambers and Cazorla, but Chambers' distribution is pretty decent, so I think you can have Chambers and Ramsey. I think Maybe that will work. But what will be, this is really weird for me. I'm going to bring this round to the transfer market. And I'm usually the one beating this question away. But what will be really interesting for me is I've thought for a long time, for the last 3 years, that Wenger's wanted a new defensive midfielder, but it's been a bit Goldilocks, you know. He's been waiting for the perfect one. And I think he was trying to do this with a striker as well until Olivier Giroud got injured. And he thought, well, fuck it, I'll buy Danny Welbeck. I don't think he's amazing, but, you know, needs must. I'll be really interested to see if he does that in January with this kind of defensive midfielder, whether he continues to wait for Goldilocks or whether he just thinks, do you know what, I've got a real need here and I'll probably just have to settle on someone that's kind of 7-8 out of 10 and cough up 20 million and, you know, whatever.
That's not really been his MO, but...
No, but I mean, he did it with Welbeck and you know, there was basically he, you know, the summer of 2014, he kind of bought a lot of squad players in.
Yeah. He could go for Schneiderlin. United aren't using him.
But, you know, he might take the view that, well, do you know what, Arteta and Flamini's contracts run out at the end of the season anyway, and he's probably not going to renew either of them. So why not, you know, try and go shopping a few months early? But I'd be fascinated to see if, you know, he really, you know, pushes that panic button and just kind of settles on someone. If Schneiderlin was still at Southampton and hadn't gone to Man United, because I know Wenger kind of hovered his finger over that button, I think he'd push it in January. Obviously that choice isn't there anymore, but I wonder if he had like a few more kind of players lined up. Maybe he swallows the William Carvalho has George Mendes as an agent thing. I don't know, but I think that's fascinating to see what he's going to do there.
Well, you will get your wish. We will find out. I mean, I don't think Coughlin's going to be back in the frame, and I can't see him relying on an aging Flamini and an untested Chambers or moving Ramsey. Paul, really quickly, what would you do against Zagreb? And is it time? I've been bleeding on about this, but we're struggling to create. The personnel we have right now is not lighting anybody's hair on fire. Is it time to change the system a little? Try Sanchez through the middle off Giroud, maybe move Cazorla up to the front three or play Ozil on the wing. Does he need to make a change to get some dynamism out of this squad and maybe try to relight a fire under Alexis? Or is he going to bang away tomorrow with Campbell, Giroud, Alexis, Ozil, Cazorla, Flamini, and just, you know, say, I still trust those guys?
I think he's going to go with trusting those guys. I mean, it'll be a completely different game, thank God. It'll be at the Emirates. We'll be able to zip it around on the pitch, so we'll start a lot faster. Hopefully, we'll have the second half like we had against WBA, but in the first half and with better results. It'll be interesting to see what he does about Campbell. I mean, that was pretty interesting that he didn't start him. I think that's a vote of no confidence to begin with, and he looked fucking pissed when Campbell missed that chance. So be interesting to see if he starts Gibbs. I thought, like I said before, I thought Gibbs did okay. Quite a bit of good in there, though he's not going to be a great finisher for us, even though he scored a goal in his previous game. So I think he's going to go with the same as against Zagreb at home at the Emirates and hope we zip it around. And they're going to be ultra defensive, so... We would probably have needed Giroud in there to bang in crosses too. Anyway, hopefully we'll be okay. I think your question might come into play the next time round.
Home in or at Norwich, I guess.
Yeah,
I mean, presumably Norwich. Ramsey might be back tomorrow. Actually, so Tim, just real quick, if there's no Ramsey, are you starting to say I've got to yoke some extra goals out of this setup by, you know, this personnel by changing the setup a little bit, or are you going to give them, I mean, given the relative weakness of that Zagreb team, I know they beat us, but they really don't look fantastic. Are you just going to go with what's tried and true and hope someone finds the confidence to put away their chances?
Yeah, I would. I don't think there's much time for anything else. And I think he's made a decision and he'll start Ramsey because, you know, on Saturday night, it was always going to be a bit short. And now all of a sudden, he's okay and he's going to start. And I gather that Ramsey has actually been training for the last few days, but we've tried to exercise a bit of caution. And I think Wenger may have just thought, I think what we'll see is Wenger thinks, well, if Chamberlain's back on Sunday, if I play Ramsey on Tuesday and I've got Chamberlain back on Sunday, perhaps I can sit Ramsey on the bench on Sunday and try and handle it with kid gloves as far as possible. But I think he will start Ramsey on the right tomorrow night. And you know, hopefully he'll be able to, you know, 65 minutes the game will be over and he'll be able to take him off. Whether that happens or not, we'll see. But I think he's going to kind of take that calculated gamble with Ramsey to try and spark something. And we do need a bit of a spark, and that means at least one of those players coming back. And if Ramsey's the closest, I think that's what he's going to do.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I think, you know, I've heard various opinions on, oh, you know, losing a player like Francis Coughlin shouldn't be the end of your season. I don't think that losing a player like Francis Coughlin is the end of your season. I think losing a player like Francis Coughlin when Arteta's gone and Flamini's your backup and the other option is a right back who's maybe a center back who could play defensive mid, who's also, you know, not 20 yet or just 20, whatever he is, I think that's the issue. And again, I think it's important to frame any debate about this in the context of what we're discussing. We're not discussing Arsenal finishing fourth. We're discussing a season where it looked like we really could have a go at the title. And once again, we're talking about injuries derailing that. And I really was tempted to say, let's go all the way back to the summer and revisit the issue of squad depth and whether it was reckless to go into the season with Flamini and Arteta as the backup for Coughlin and not get a striker and all that. But the truth is, it's such well-tread ground. Everybody's made every point there is to make about it. So I think at this point, it's not really going to be interesting to everyone. So maybe let's just leave it there. Big game tomorrow. I mean, if we win, and assuming Bayern do what they can do to Olympiacos, and I still think they will, even if they're at 50% of effort, it all comes down to the final group game. So there's a lot on the line tomorrow. And hopefully, you know, those players who didn't step up and take their chances on the weekend will show the confidence to do it this time. Tim, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on. I know it was a long weekend of travel and cold and not particularly the best footballing experience, but thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. My pleasure as always.
Yeah, enjoy the match tomorrow. Tim can be found on Twitter at Stilberto. You can also find his wonderful writing in various places, including Ars blog. And Paul, you can find his wonderful writing on his blog. You can find his wonderful tweets on his Twitter account at PosninInMyPants. Paul, thanks as always.
Thanks, guys. I actually almost enjoyed that, which is some going.
Yeah. Well, it's not a great occasion. Let's just, you know, fingers crossed, maybe Coughlin comes back sometime this season and can play his part and Theo's back a little sooner. I mean, we can't redo the summer, so we need the players back. And if they come back, you know, I still think it's all there for us. The good news is domestically, we have a little buffer of easy matches, quote unquote, where we can hopefully get fit. My name's Elliot Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. I strongly recommend it. If you can leave us a review on iTunes, give us 5 stars, you know, say how great Tim and Paul and James is as well. James joins us regularly. And then you can bash me in the comments after that. So it all works out. In any event, up the Arsenal. Big game tomorrow to keep our Champions League hopes alive. Or if we notice with 10 minutes to go that Olympiacos is beating Bayern Munich, let's lose 5-0 tomorrow and get out of the Europa League. Cheers, and we'll talk to you after the game.